You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And it's on to Plan B. On that unfortunate note, welcome into Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast discussion of all things Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. As we chat this Friday morning, we got the news that a lot of us were fearing for some time, LeBron James not opting in to the final year of his existing contract, instead choosing to become an unrestricted free agent as of July 1st. We heard Thursday that the same holds true for Paul George. Each of those guys not opting in, instead becoming free agents, and those decisions all but eliminate the possibility of each becoming a Houston Rocket this offseason. As a refresher for why, opting in was the only way that they could facilitate a trade to Houston without subjecting the Rockets to a hard salary cap. The Rockets, with a team that won 65 games last year and pushed the historically great Warriors to Game 7, with a team that good, it becomes pricey when there are free agents in Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, Gerald Green. They're all becoming free agents. So if you want to keep all or most of that supporting cast together, starting obviously with Chris Paul and Clint Capella, two of your big three around James Harden, it's probably going to require going into the luxury tax to do so. And that's just the way it works in the modern NBA. That's economics. When you have a team this good, guys are going to get paid because you have lots of really good players. And unfortunately, should you acquire LeBron James or Paul George through a sign-and-trade and free agency, you would be hard-capped at the apron level, which would not allow the Rockets to retain all of their existing supporting cast. It's also unrealistic for the Rockets to go below the cap without just radically deconstructing the team, which is not something that you would want to do after winning 65 games and pushing the Warriors to Game 7 and really having the Warriors all but beaten until Chris Paul's ill-timed hamstring injury in the final minute of Game 5. The only real mathematical way for the Rockets to add someone like LeBron James or Paul George to the existing core that was so good was for them to opt in to the final year of their existing contract, but use their prospective free agency as leverage for a trade, the same way that Chris Paul did on June 28th of last year. Unfortunately, LeBron James and Paul George each seem to have their eyes on different locations. Part of it may just be the sheer difficulty in getting to Houston because there's no cap room here, so it's a kind of a laborious process and with no guarantees. Even if they wanted to, their teams could simply say, we would rather the cap space, the financial savings of them walking, rather than taking whatever the Rockets would offer them. So it was never going to be easy. That might have played a part of it. But for all intents and purposes, the dream is dead. It wouldn't shock me if the Rockets tried to get a meeting with either player should they take those, because ultimately it can never hurt. And my guess is that if LeBron James or Paul George, especially LeBron, were to say in July, okay, we want to go to Houston, even though it would hard cap the Rockets, my guess is that Daryl Morey would still do it. It would be difficult, but my guess is that even if it meant letting some of your current supporting cast go, he would take it based on the upside of another all-star player. In the case of LeBron, a historically great one, that might be the greatest player ever. The Rockets might take the meeting if those are offered, but I just can't see it ending with that player choosing to come to Houston. Because the reality is this. Houston was never going to be about money or about lifestyle. For LeBron James, despite his public statements about high IQ players and wanting to win championships, there have been enough rumors by now, it seems pretty clear that lifestyle, his family, the entertainment industry, the forces pulling him to LA are not just about winning titles. Those other things matter. And that's fine. That's his prerogative. He has earned the right to choose his destination based on whatever selection process he can come up with. But the reality is, with Houston, there's no direct path to money. And it's not like Houston, as great as the city is, and I love it, it's not Los Angeles in terms of off-the-court opportunities. With Paul George, I think the pull to Oklahoma City certainly seems to have a tight bond with Russell Westbrook. But beyond that, they can offer him a five-year max that no other team can. And especially for Paul George, a guy who, while an all-star, not nearly at the level of LeBron James. It's not like he can be guaranteed that in a year or two that the market would be exactly the same. And coming off a really serious leg injury a couple of years ago, maybe the financial security of 5 full years means more to him than certain other players. But in either case, the pull to Houston is not money or lifestyle. The pull to Houston would be the opportunity to win. And if that were going to be the far and away leading consideration for either player, they would have orchestrated a deal in June, because it doesn't take a genius to figure out that the best chance to win in Houston would be to get a deal done in June rather than July, because the June deal, by opting in, would allow the Rockets to build the best supporting cast around the big three of that new player plus Chris Paul and James Harden. Whereas in July, all the roadblocks are the same. You would still have to get the original team to do a deal with the Rockets, starting with probably Eric Gordon. In the case of LeBron, at least, you would have to find a home for Ryan Anderson, most likely. All of those hurdles remain. No direct path to cap space. The Rockets certainly not going to be an under-the-cap team without just tearing apart the roster, and that's just not going to happen. All the roadblocks would be there, the same things that made it difficult to seal a deal in June, but without the upside, because by hard capping the Rockets, which a sign and trade would do, then you would not have the same level of supporting cast around that player in Houston. So that's why the dream effectively died as far as the guys who are free agents to be, because the only route to acquire them, with the Rockets not being an undercap team, would be a sign and trade, which would hard cap the Rockets at the apron level. Now, would Daryl Morey, if they were willing to grant a meeting, still do it? Sure, it never hurts. They have nothing else. These communications often pay off down the road. We've seen, I think back to 2016, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Nene, the summer they brought in all three of those guys. The Rockets came very close to adding each in prior years, either via trade or in free agency. I believe they had a meeting with Eric Gordon. So if Paul George or LeBron were willing to meet with the Rockets in free agency, I think Daryl would absolutely do it. You put your best foot forward, and worst case scenario, you just make a good impression, and maybe it pays off with the player's representation, or maybe it pays off a few years down the line, if and when they become available again, the same way it appeared to do with Gordon, Anderson, and Nene in 2016, and perhaps even Chris Paul in 2017, because the Rockets had pursued him a couple of times before as well. But it's just hard to see the result being that player deciding that they want to go to Houston, because if they were inclined to think along those lines, then my guess is that they would have orchestrated an opt-in and trade deal in June. That's why this opt-in deadline was so important of June 29th, and unfortunately, it did not go the way that a lot of Rockets fans wanted. That said, my sense, at least from reading my Twitter timeline, is that there is entirely too much despair out there about the prospects of a quiet offseason for the Rockets. Now, I don't think it's necessarily going to be quiet. I do think Daryl Morey will move on down his list in terms of potential trades, starting with maybe Jimmy Butler. We'll have more on that in latter segments. But for now, I do want to acknowledge the possibility that it's relatively quiet and that the Rockets run it back. Because, yes, it is difficult to scale the mountain again to get all the way back to the Western Conference Finals. I understand that. But I think there are a lot of people around the NBA and even in Houston that are not appreciating just how dominant this Rockets team was last season. And of course, they need to pay the money to bring the likes of Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Trevor Ariza back. We'll talk about that more as the program progresses. But assuming they're able to do that, folks, in year one of the Chris Paul, James Harden partnership, we may as well call it the Chris Harden partnership, the Rockets won 65 games. They had an 800 winning percentage in the playoffs before playing the Warriors. They were a juggernaut. It's not like, even if there's some regression, that there's a team, even the Lakers with LeBron James or Oklahoma City, if they get Paul George back, the Lakers were 30 games behind the Rockets this past year. The closest any team was to Houston outside of Golden State was the Portland Trailblazers, and they were 16 games back. Those are massive, massive margins. And everything we saw from the Rockets, it's not like they just had an unsustainably lucky record in close games. Their point differential, net rating, pretty much you can pick your advanced metric. The Rockets were every bit as good as the Warriors, if not a little bit better. They were a juggernaut. So no matter what happens the remainder of this offseason, I would expect the Rockets to be clear favorites for a top 2 seed in the West. Hopefully you can get the 1 again, but either way, you'd be on course to get back to the Western Conference Finals and hope you have better luck. It's not like the Warriors were clearly superior to the Rockets. The Rockets were up 3-2 and seemed to have them beaten. Unfortunately, the ill-timed Chris Paul hamstring injury, the historic outlier of a shooting stretch, 7 of 44 from 3 in Game 7, including an 0 of 27 run in the middle quarters, and then the awful officiating, which, shoot, I could do an entire series of podcasts on that. Don't even get me started. Even with all of that, the Rockets lost by single digits in Game 7 without Chris Paul. There is entirely too much pessimism, and I understand being a little disappointed because you want to get LeBron James. We know the friendship with Chris Paul, and despite the financial roadblocks, it would have been nice. It would have felt like the kill shot that Kevin Durant got that the Warriors got 2 years ago by adding Kevin Durant. I get it. It's natural to be a little sad. But the status quo, this is not just a cute team that sort of overachieved and had a little bit of luck, which is the way a lot of things seem to make it appear if you were to go by the social media reaction. No, this was an outright juggernaut that tore apart the NBA this past season. There are certainly no guarantees. And even if they get back to the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors, it's possible Golden State could be even better. Although maybe with Golden State making four straight finals, maybe at some point you do have some fatigue start to show up. We'll have to wait and see. But my general sense, and I want to leave off this initial segment with this, is that there's a little too much despair. It's natural to be a little sad, but don't forget how dominant this team was. The status quo is really, really good. And yes, the status quo, they showed you that they are fully capable of even beating the Warriors. So while it would have been great to get LeBron James, there is no reason to overreact and declare it a lost era. There's no guarantees, and it'd be great to feel like that you were just a championship inevitability, which maybe you would have been if you had LeBron James, but this group is fully capable as is, and this is not just a cute little team that got a few bounces. This is a team that dominated the NBA all season long, and if they can bring back their existing core and possibly add to it with the taxpayer MLE, then I like their chances to have a really, really good shot next spring, just like they did this past spring. So now that LeBron is presumably off the board for the Rockets, the next item on the agenda is re-signing most of your existing supporting cast and possibly adding to it with the taxpayer mid-level exception, which starts at about $5.3 billion a year. Now, I don't think Daryl Morey is done in terms of big game hunting, but my guess is that it takes a back seat, at least in the next few days. My guess is that over the remainder of the offseason, they'll see if some guys might can shake loose, and we'll talk about that in the final segment. But for segment two, I want to discuss what's on the more immediate horizon, which in my opinion is trying to wrap up deals with the likes of Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, and maybe even Luke Bamute. My sense is that the first guy to come back would be Chris Paul. I don't really see a fit for him elsewhere, and my guess is that be it 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, he's going to get the max in Houston. I think in a perfect world, you could limit it to not the full 5 years, but either way, the Rockets are going to be a capped out team for the foreseeable future, so it's not like it makes that big of a difference other than the exact accounting figures for Tillman Fertitta, new owner, moving forward. Chris Paul, when he's right, even now at 33 years old, still a top 10 player in the league. We saw him essentially win two Western Conference Finals games by himself down the stretch in Game 4 and Game 5. He can still be really, really good, even against the upper echelon competition. Still has not won an NBA title in his storied Hall of Fame career, so it makes all the sense in the world for the Rockets to bring him back. And after winning 65 games in the first year of the CP3-James Harden partnership, with Harden winning MVP, I think it makes all the sense in the world for Chris to come back, too. You'll hear a few scenarios until he signs about what if Chris Paul followed LeBron James to L.A. Well, first off, it's pretty clear that LeBron James, even in L.A., is not having the pull that perhaps people expected. It's pretty clear that Paul George is giving a lot more consideration to Oklahoma City than many expected. We've seen the trade talks between the Spurs and Lakers apparently hit a stall for Kawhi Leonard. And quite frankly, right now, the Lakers don't even have two max slots. We're actually hearing about them adding on salary. There's a deal talked about, I believe it originated from Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post, about the Lakers taking one of Denver's bad salaries, the likes of Kenneth Faried, Wilson Chandler, Darrell Arthur, to reduce Denver's luxury tax bill and getting a first-round pick from the Nuggets, which they could presumably use in offers for Kawhi Leonard or elsewhere around the league. So the Lakers don't have two max slots as is, and it looks like they're closer to adding salary than they are to subtracting it. So I don't really expect them to have a second max slot after LeBron James to add Chris Paul, even if they wanted to. And then even if they were, I don't think that LeBron James, Chris Paul, and a few leftovers from a 35-win team is nearly as good as the Chris Paul, James Harden team in Houston that won 65 games. And I think that Chris is aware of that. Houston has been an enormous boon for Chris Paul, and it should only become even more so heading into his mid to late 30s over the remainder of his NBA career because of his ability to play off the ball more. Because you have a James Harden in his 20s that can do so much of the heavy lifting, especially over the 82-game grind. With the Lakers having Chris Paul and LeBron James each entering their age 34 seasons with a lot of unproven youth around them, that's not really a recipe to compete with the Golden State Warriors. And I think Chris Paul knows that. And if he's driven by winning a title, which from all indications he is, his best bet is in Houston. Now, LeBron James may feel differently, but I think it's pretty clear, as discussed in segment one, some of the considerations for LeBron James are based on off-court reasons. Lifestyle, his entertainment company, where his family wants to live, etc., etc. For Chris Paul, it's been pretty calculated over the past year that for him, it's about the best chance to win a title, and as evidenced by this past year, nothing's changed. His best chance is in Houston, Texas, and I firmly expect him, barring something shocking at the last minute, such as the Rockets not offering him the max, which I do not anticipate. As mentioned, we've already seen some signs from Tillman Fertitta, such as buying a draft pick that they used for Purdue's Vince Edwards, that he's willing to spend money, that the potential luxury tax bills are not scaring him off. So unless there's something extremely uncharacteristic, I expect the Rockets to take care of Chris early, as they should, and then the foundation will officially be locked in place. From there, it gets a little trickier. Because Clint Capela, as a restricted free agent, the Rockets can match any offer he gets elsewhere. But the question is, where's the offer going to come from? We had heard from Kelly Eco earlier this offseason that the Suns might be preparing a max offer. Well, then the Suns got the number one draft pick and ended up using that on Ayton, so they're presumably out of the center market. We heard Dallas as a potential suitor, but we've had Dallas connected strongly this week to DeAndre Jordan, also to Boogie Cousins, so it's fair to wonder whether they're truly in Capela's market. And then the other teams that have cap room, it's not like Brooklyn really has a clear role either, or that Clint Capela would even want to play in a market for a bad team. There's not many franchises out there that have cap room this summer. It's not just like the Rockets with the bad Ryan Anderson contract. Lots of teams have bad contracts from 2016, and the cap has not gone up as rapidly as anticipated. So the combination of not smoothing the increase in 2016 and then the next 2 years coming in a little lower than expectations, there's not much cap room out there. And with Clint Capela being a restricted free agent, meaning the Rockets can match any outside offer, it would not shock me if the Rockets slow play it and try and get the best deal they can. Especially because in the case of Clint, even if there are some hurt feelings, they can still match any offer. Now, as I've said before, Clint Capela is a really, really good basketball player. Even if it's the max, I fully anticipate the Rockets keeping him. That said, if you can reduce your luxury tax bill, then it makes it all the easier to continue adding pieces such as the taxpayer MLE moving forward. So I think the Rockets will be up front and say, look, we'll pay you your market value, but why don't you go out and establish that? With Trevor Ariza, it gets a little trickier. The same principle applies, but you do have to walk a fine line in terms of making sure there are no hurt feelings, because with Trevor being unrestricted, he theoretically could go elsewhere if he were so inclined, so they do have to be mindful of not being too blunt. But my guess is that there are enough ties between Ariza and that Rockets locker room that he's willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. And my thought is that the Rockets approach Clint and Trevor the same way, saying, look, go out there, establish your market, we'll pay you what you're worth, but we can't just write you a blank check. With Ariza, we heard from Shams Charania of Yahoo that maybe the initial report of $50-60 million was a little exaggerated in terms of Ariza's contract expectations, but he is looking for potential suitors elsewhere. It feels an awful lot like the Andre Iguodala dynamic last July when he first met with Sacramento, then of all teams, he met with Houston to sort of establish leverage financially with Sacramento, who had cap room, and then from Houston as a direct competition threat to the Warriors, to where they eventually gave up more money. Because with Ariza, it's the same scenario this summer with the Rockets as it was with Iguodala and the Warriors last summer. The Rockets could theoretically pay him anything. They have his bird rights, the same way the Warriors could. It comes down to the practicality, which is that you can't just write everyone blank checks, or at some point, the repeater taxes are just going to become punitive in terms of making it impossible to keep building a contender, especially in this era of the Warriors where the bar is so high that you have to be cutthroat on every dollar you spend. So my guess is that the Rockets speak with Clint and Trevor and their representation and explain to them, and hopefully they're receptive, that, look, we don't want you to leave, and I would be very shocked if either do, but I also don't think that the Rockets are just going to give them a blank check to re-sign on July 1st. It might take a few days, because I think the Rockets, if they can save a few million dollars in each case by getting them a little bit less than what their day one request would be, then ultimately, down the line, that's going to make it easier for Tillman Fertitta to continue using all the tools at his disposal, such as the mid-level exceptions every year, the biannual, which they don't have this year because they used an Antarctic block last year, but they will have it moving forward, those types of things, than if you just write a blank check, because at some point, those dollar figures are going to catch up with you. Even if the Rockets are capped out regardless, there's a point in which it would just become too restrictive to keep adding, and in a league with the Warriors, two MVPs every year and four All-Stars, you've got to try and use every tool at your disposal to keep up. And I don't think that's the Rockets being selfish. I think that's just common sense. And my guess is that both Clint and Trevor and their representation will understand that. They'll probably use the market to get whatever leverage they can. And then my guess is that the Rockets match on both. Obviously in Clint's case, because they'll have the option with him being restricted, but Trevor informally as well. My guess is his representation comes back to the Rockets with an offer, and they'll probably get something either matching or close enough to where he splits the difference and stays in Houston the same way Iguodala stayed in Golden State as their defensive ace this time a year ago. And by the way, Ariza is still so important to the Rockets. I understand he went 0 for 12 in Game 7, yada yada, but over the course of the year, his defensive versatility, his veteran influence, it means a whole heck of a lot in that locker room. Incredibly tight bonds with Chris Paul and James Harden, and I fully expect that the Rockets will make him a priority and do not have any plans to let him go. What could make Ariza's situation a little dicey, not just the Rockets, but the damage of the league as a whole. There is going to be very little money for mid-level guys. We have seen players such as Danny Green, Thaddeus Young, veterans in that same Ariza tier, choose to opt in rather than become free agents because there aren't many teams with cap room, the dynamic we discussed earlier, and what few teams do have it, the likes of Chicago, Atlanta, Brooklyn. What does a Trevor Ariza at 33 years old make any sense for them? How does that at all benefit their long-term plan? So my guess is that it may take a few days, but the Rockets can ultimately get a very good deal on Ariza, and that could benefit them in other areas as well. With Luke Bamute, who's also in his 30s and coming off a subpar playoff run and injury concerns, the big question is, can they get him for what amounts to the non-bird tender, 120% of his prior salary, which is about $2.8 million, or will they have to use their taxpayer MLE at $5.3 million? My hope is that, based on the fact that he's in his 30s, they're not being a huge market, that they can get him for a discount, that non-bird tender, and if they can, that's a very big deal, because my sense is that there's going to be a lot more quality on the market for the taxpayer MLE, that 5.3 starting salary, than you would ordinarily expect. Even some veterans, it wouldn't shock me if a Tyreek Evans, maybe even a J.J. Redick, Seth Curry, who hasn't played in a year, but the shooting percentages are crazy good, it wouldn't shock me if someone of quality is potentially available to the Rockets for that taxpayer MLE, because there are so few teams with cap room, and most of the teams that have it aren't really looking to win now. They're probably going to spend it on, if they do, younger players, or perhaps a better way to look at it, they're probably going to spend it, their cap room, on absorbing bad contracts from other teams, such as potentially Ryan Anderson, although I don't really expect the Rockets to look to move Ryan unless it's for a piece that can help. I don't think the Rockets will look to move him just for cash savings because they're over the cap anyway. It needs to make sense. Now, maybe if the Rockets can move Ryan for a Kent Bazemore, a similarly overpaid deal, but one that makes a little more sense for their team, maybe they look at that. But my guess is that teams like Brooklyn and Atlanta, they'll be more intrigued by using their cap space to absorb bad contracts around the league and then get a draft pick or two as a reward for doing so, rather than spend it on middling veterans. So my guess is that because of the limited cap space around the league, you see more players in that middle class that kind of fall towards the bargain basement level, because what you're going to see this summer is more haves and have-nots than ever. Yeah, you got a max tier, guys like LeBron, Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins, Clint Capella, but I don't know if you're going to have that many guys that are in that $15 million a year range. I think you're going to have a lot of guys in the max level, and then a lot of others, even quality players, are going to fall through the cracks and be available at the mid-level. So if the Rockets can save that mid-level and not have to save it on Luke, then I think you might be surprised at the level of impact player the Rockets could get on the market. We'll have to see the dynamics. I think it's unlikely the Rockets get a deal done on day one, because you probably have to realize that every player in the market is going to be looking for more than that. But after a few days, when it becomes clear that some guys might be kind of falling through the cracks, the Rockets could be in a position to strike if they don't have to spend that MLE on Luke Bamute. So that's another thing to watch when it comes to keep this team together. Because if they don't have to use that on Luke, then I think you would be able to get a little bit bigger acquisition in terms of another guard. We've mentioned needing to get a fourth guard, another shooter, another 3-and-D type, maybe even a better backup center than Nene turning 36. A lot of places you could go with that taxpayer MLE if you can save it, and ultimately the same forces that are going to make it a tight market for Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, it may also work to your benefit in terms of bringing in another piece, assuming you don't have to use that on Luke Bamute. I haven't mentioned Gerald Green, but it's my expectation that Gerald Green in his 30s picked up off the street. He is what he is. He's a minimum player, I think, and hope he'll be back in Houston, but I can't imagine the Rockets or any other team wasting significant resources on a guy in their 30s who effectively is a shooter only without very much defensive value. I think the Rockets would like to have him back, but he's certainly not a priority, and my guess is that he probably does come back, but it's a minimum deal, and it's probably not on day one. Give it a few days in July, and my guess is that Gerald Green, unofficial mayor of Houston, does end up back as well. Now, I wanted the second segment to be about bringing back the supporting cast, because I think that's the next thing on the agenda. It's not that the Rockets are done in terms of pursuing larger options, but it's probably going to take more than just a couple days to shake out. As mentioned before, my bet is that in terms of pursuing more all-star level pieces, the next thing on the agenda would be to move down the list to 2019 free agents, guys who can try and shake their way free the way Paul George did from Indiana this time a year ago. We've already seen it start happening with Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio. Maybe it can start happening in a few weeks with Jimmy Butler in Minnesota. The idea is for the Rockets, led by Chris Paul and James Harden behind the scenes, to start some communications with that player, then have that player sort of leverage his team with his representation floating the idea that, hey, they could leave for nothing, and what you get now with the player under contract for a year is probably better than what you could get next summer when the player would presumably have 1 foot out the door already and the team's leverage be all but shot. So my guess is that Jimmy Butler, with Houston ties, could be at the forefront of that list. Will he be willing to go scorched earth the way Paul George did a year ago and Kawhi Leonard is doing right now in San Antonio? I don't know, but stay tuned. My guess is the Rockets wanted an answer from LeBron and PG first, and now that they've got one, they'll start moving down the list. We'll see how Jimmy wants to play it. You never know, they could look at Carmelo again like they did last summer, either with a trade of Ryan Anderson to the Thunder, which would come close to working. You could add a couple of spare parts, or maybe if Carmelo gets bought out, being a malcontent, maybe the Rockets see him as a better fit here in Houston than he's been in Oklahoma City. Not an easy position fit with the Rockets having so many forwards already, but who knows? If we know the Rockets liked him this time a year ago, and if Chris Paul wants to bring him in and thinks that it's a better fit than it's been in than Oklahoma City, then you can't rule out that maybe he would be an acquisition if he gets bought out by the Thunder for the taxpayer MLE that we were just discussing. Carmelo hasn't been bought out yet, but now that Houston did not get LeBron and Paul George, maybe that's another stone that they want to kind of not leave unturned. The bottom line, though, other than Carmelo, most of the big-name options, like Jimmy Butler, are going to be by trade, for the same reason as the potential opt-in in trades we discussed for the likes of LeBron and PG, is that if you do a trade, just a run-of-the-mill trade, not a sign-in trade, you're not going to be hard-capped, so you can add them to the existing supporting cast. The difficulty for the Rockets is that they don't have that many assets because a lot of their players are free agents, and those that aren't, you have a lot of veterans like, of course, Ryan Anderson, but also PJ Tucker, Nene, who certainly are nice pieces, but they don't really fit around the league, especially with the dynamics we just got through discussing, being that there's so many haves and have-nots. The few teams that have cap space, or in this case would probably be trading a star, are probably not going to be interested in guys in their mid-30s or approaching their mid-30s, because if they're trading a star, they're not really going to be in a position to win now anyway. So the fit just isn't there, especially in a league where the bar for contention is so high, with the Warriors being what they are right now, that more teams are concerned about what's going to happen 2 or 3 years from now than what's going to happen next year. That's especially the case if a team is trading a star. And for the Rockets, a lot of their guys under contract that aren't free agents, of course James Harden is off the board, they just don't really fit in terms of being desirable to a lot of teams. There's one exception to that, that being Eric Gordon. Because Gordon, at just 29 years old, a very good player, as we saw in the Western Conference Finals, fully capable, if he starts, of scoring 20 points per game, being a good shooter, a playmaker. He has value around the league, not even 30 yet, on a reasonable deal, $13 million for a season for 2 more years. And between Eric Gordon and having all of your future first-round draft picks, which they do after the 2018 draft pass this past week, the Rockets, between Gordon and the draft picks, can put together a compelling offer. It's not great, but if a player is willing to play hardball and say to other teams around the league that I won't re-sign there, then Gordon and draft picks as a starting point is a lot better than nothing in terms of teams who might watch a player the caliber of Jimmy Butler potentially leave them for zero compensation a year from now. So the bottom line is Eric Gordon is the ticket to the Rockets at least being in the game moving forward for other star pursuits via trade. It certainly won't be via free agency because, as explained, the Rockets are nowhere near having cap room. So because of that, there's a very interesting report from Zach Lowe in his free agency preview column last night at ESPN.com, in which he mentions that if the Rockets miss out on the big stars, they might approach Eric Gordon for extension talks once they are allowed to do so in July. It's very interesting, and at first glance, it might seem contradictory because, hey, you're going from talking about trading Eric Gordon to extending him? And I know how it might seem like whiplash at first glance, but in reality, it's not that contradictory. It's not like the Rockets want to move Eric Gordon. He is still a really good basketball player and only 29 years old. You were talking about potentially trading Eric Gordon because he's your only positive asset in terms of making a deal work financially for other teams around the NBA. So if you can keep him in Houston, well, first, it helps because he's a good player. But secondly, say you can sign him to a team-friendly extension like Lou Williams, who I think took a 3-for-24 deal with the Clippers earlier this season. If you can extend Gordon's contract, make him cost-controlled for longer, that only improves his value as a trade asset moving forward. Because keep in mind, a deal does not have to happen now. It could happen later in the offseason. It could happen at the trade deadline. Maybe it happens next summer when Ryan Anderson, assuming they keep him, as mentioned, I don't really see the Rockets trading Ryan unless they can get a better fit for their team now. I don't see them dumping him into cap space and trading the first-round picks they have to do to move that contract if they're not really going to be able to use that cap room because they're over the cap anyway. Maybe next summer when Ryan Anderson's an expiring deal, then it's even easier for the Rockets because you have Eric Gordon as an asset under club control for a lot of years, and Ryan Anderson expiring. That's a really attractive package, actually, for a star. But the bottom line is, based on those factors, it does make sense to extend Eric Gordon. My guess is they don't do it right when the clock strikes July because you still want to, you know, explore a few other scenarios, see if anybody else shakes free that you might could use Eric in a deal for. But if you can't, then yeah, I'm open to discussing an extension with him because he's a good basketball player. Keeps him beyond his current contract, which expires in 2020. You can never have too many good players. And in terms of his asset desirability around the league, if you extend him on a reasonable deal, that only makes him even more of an asset moving forward. And I'm sure Eric is somewhat aware of the possibilities that have been floated with his name this summer, but the Rockets are generally pretty good about making players understand a lot of this is media speculation. We heard people wondering last offseason, when it was clear as day that Ryan Anderson was being shopped, how would Ryan react when reporting to camp? Everything was just fine. So I'm sure the Rockets can smooth things over very easily if they end up keeping Eric. And quite frankly, in terms of his willingness to sign a deal, it's financial security. Even if he's a little miffed, and I have no indication to think that he is, then ultimately, be it the Rockets or somewhere else, if he signs a contract that adds years, then that's more financial security for a guy who has had some injury concerns in the past. So ultimately, I think Eric would be amenable to discussing a deal. I think the Rockets will as well. And if there's a middle ground to where his contract is seen as a positive around the league, making him a positive asset, then ultimately it makes sense for both sides to get a deal done. And it would not surprise me at all if that's a fallback option for the Rockets. I know a lot of people will think that it's committing to the status quo, but in reality, it's not. If anything, it's making him even more of an asset moving forward around the league as the Rockets continue to search for potential trade partners to add the All-Star that apparently they're not going to be able to do with the likes of Paul George and LeBron James. Whew. Clearly, I'm a little exhausted with all this free agency talk, and free agency hasn't even started yet, so that's a good point for me to wrap up. As always, if you want more breaking news in the interim, the best place to get it between episodes is on Twitter. I am on there at Ben Dubose, show on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook account at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Website, lockedonrockets.com. Always, you can access our content. Contact me, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, would love to hear from you. Also, if you're not already subscribed to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to your podcast, search for Locked On Rockets, subscribe to us, and leave us a 5-star review if you could. By subscribing, you get our episodes and alert right when they come out. So if there's breaking news like LeBron on Friday, you'll know right when there's a new episode with analysis. And if you leave us a 5-star review, that's what makes us attractive to advertisers around the country and makes the business model work here at Locked On Rockets as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for today, I'll sign off. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll be talking again very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast discussion of your Houston Rockets.